Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 45, and it's Colts Week. And through logistics and some non-responsiveness from a couple of Colts beat writers, we are unfortunately not going to have a beat writer this week. But I guess if there's a week to not have a beat writer, Dave, it's as the Steelers take on the Colts this week. It's a team that the Steelers seemingly, even though it's not scheduled this way, they play every year. They've played them a bunch in the past couple of years. And, of course, some of many of Ben Roethlisberger's best performances that we've seen and the Steelers' best performances that we've seen have come in against the Colts of late. So that's what we got. It is the last 1 o'clock game the Steelers will play until the very last weekend of the season when the Steelers host the Baltimore or the Cleveland Browns at 1 o'clock. Now, I guess with the Steelers doing as well as they are, they could be flexed out, but they are such a big draw and the teams they play are big name teams. You know, the Packers, they're a big-name team. I would find it unlikely that they'll be flexed out of any of these games, Dave. So enjoy the 1 o'clock time frame, and from now on, we get to go late afternoon and night games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, we apologize for not getting a beat writer today. Phil B., the guy that we've had on for several years now, evidently no longer covers the team for the outlet he was previously doing so for. And he let me know this past week. So then we tried to contact a couple of Indianapolis Star writers and not much success there. But life goes on. It's rare that we miss, hooking up with one of these beat writers. And as you said, boy, things are going to change in the second half of the schedule for those of us who follow and cover the team closely with these a lot of these late games. As far as getting flexed out of it, I'm trying to remember, have the Steelers ever been flexed back out?
I think there was one game they were flexed out of. I do think it's happened once. I mean, we've seen them, because they play so many primetime games, there aren't that many opportunities to flex them in to different games. Now, did we have a game earlier this year that was moved back? The Bengals game, was that moved to 425 or something moved?
Yeah, that one was moved, and then another game was protected by one of the networks,
that it couldn't be moved, right?
Right. So, the Titans. I mean, we know that game is not going to get moved. Next Thursday, Green Bay, as you said. I mean, when you talk about Packers and the Steelers, you're talking about two of easily the top five fan bases in the league. The Packers aren't playing well, but they're still technically not eliminated yet. So I can't see that one getting moved out. And what's that? The day after Thanksgiving, too, I think, right? Or 2 days after Thanksgiving. What day is Thanksgiving on this year, David?
It's on Thursday. It's always on Thursday.
I mean, what day is it? What date is it?
I think it's the 22nd. Let me just pull it up here. But the Steelers play the Packers on Sunday, and the 23rd is so the Steelers are the 26th at the Packers. They play Thursday's the 23rd.
All right, then the Cincinnati Baltimore games are always huge draws, ratings wise, regardless of where those teams are. New England, obviously, that's going to that's a late afternoon game. If anything, maybe that one gets flexed to a later time. Wouldn't that be something? And then of course there's the Christmas Day game against the Texans.
One I could see the Steelers Bengals getting moved if the Bengals were to be 4-4, whatever the numbers would work out to be. But if the Bengals are 4-8 and the division's clinched, that's the game that could be moved.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see for sure. But a lot of midnight oil coming up here, you know, in the second half of the schedule here, and you know, it starts going to start against the Colts here, 1 o'clock on Sunday. That'll be the last time for now that we play that early.
All right. Well, we managed to get through kind of 2 weeks without a game coming up, and with the bye week, and kind of looking back at the first half of the season and doing a lot of reader emails, and we appreciate all the emails that we received. So thanks for that. So, you know, maybe we'll run a little shorter today as we get ready for this game and talk about what's going on around the NFL. You know that I love talking about what's going on with the rest of the league as well. So we'll have some time to do that today. But Dave, let's take a look at the Colts, and we'll start with the injury report. And I think the most interesting thing, since, you know, we get two injury reports since we did things early on Wednesday morning, and the surprising news here is James Harrison. And James Harrison hasn't gone the last 2 days. I think you can pretty much book it that James Harrison won't be playing and won't get a helmet on Sunday. He'll be down for this game against the Colts with a back injury. And it raises, you know, not to concerning questions other than James Harrison's health. Sorry, but it just raises the issue here. James Harrison didn't play a snap against the Lions, and there didn't seemed to be any injury concerns. He wasn't listed on any injury reports, but he didn't play. And the odd thing about not playing is James Harrison didn't stand on the sideline when the Steelers defense was on the field. That's unusual for a player who may enter the game. And I think I commented on that on the Monday after that game, that, you know, this is the unusual thing here, because if somebody were to be injured, you need the guy to be standing there to be ready to go in. And what happened was, actually, on that side, T.J. Watt did come out for some plays, not injury-related as far as I know, and Anthony Ciccolo went in. So we discussed that. It was just kind of odd. Well, then you have the bye week, and now you have James Harrison not practicing this week. This certainly leads me to believe that there was some level of injury or back issue or something involved with James Harrison in that Detroit game that, for whatever reason, wasn't publicly disclosed. And now we see that it is publicly disclosed. And again, you know, with a 39-year-old guy, this is not particularly surprising. But, you know, who knows how much James Harrison will play the rest of the way. But, you know, he hasn't practiced the last 2 days, and I certainly wouldn't expect him to go on Sunday.
Can I say bullshit on this podcast?
Yeah, fire away.
I call bullshit. On basically what you just said. I don't think he's injured, David. Have you seen him on Instagram and Twitter? He's still doing all those crazy 15,000-pound lifts and whatnot. That back of his is not injured, in my opinion. This is just Mike Tomlin trying to save face and not embarrass James Harrison in the process. I truly believe that James Harrison is going to be a healthy, unhealthy scratch for the second time this season, and the third time overall. I think that he's been will have been inactive this week. I'm not buying that he's injured, David. I'm sorry. I'm not. I just think this is a facade to that way. If Tomlin is asked again about why James Harrison didn't dress or play the last couple weeks, he can say, well, you know, we had him on the injury report with a back injury. And you know, that's why. And James Harrison, you know, it kind of saves some embarrassment, I think, in that way, by putting him on the injury report as well, and then ultimately making him inactive on Sunday. I firmly, firmly believe that.
So I don't think you're right or wrong. I hadn't really given that a lot of consideration. So let me ask the obvious questions to take just the other side of the coin. Is if Mike Tomlin's already addressed this and had him down as a healthy scratch, and Joey Porter's addressed this and said, look, James understands, he should be proud that he's part of the NFL at age 39, and these other guys are going to play, and he understands that. I mean, since they've already gone through that dog and pony show, why would they be concerned about embarrassment at this point?
I think just because, you know, it can become a weekly thing. I mean, he's still going to get asked about it, you know. And you know, why does so many things keep, you know, why are these coaches asked almost weekly? Well, what are you going to do? Are you monitoring? Are you afraid that you're overworking Le'Veon Bell? Just the same kind of things. People are going to ask because there's going to be an outcry, you know, for James Harrison not playing again. You know, and putting him on the injury report is an easy out, in my opinion. For the sure, he might have a little tweak in his back, but I mean, how is anybody even gonna know? How is the NFL gonna even know? Hell, they have hard enough problems with the NFL trying to get people to properly list players on the injury report. You know, they're not going to bat an eye at a guy that may or may not have a back injury being placed on the injury report, especially when he's listed as not practicing and then ultimately shows up on the inactive list, on game day there. So I honestly believe this is just a way for Mike Tomlin to protect himself, next week or so from questions about James Harrison. And it kind of, you know, doesn't embarrass James Harrison as much, I don't think. I firmly believe that. I mean, look, I said at the beginning of the year, I thought there's going to be multiple weeks here where James Harrison is not active. And even though he was active against the Lions, he didn't even play, you know. So
yeah, so, you know, I do think part of the reason I think there's something going on is because of the way he acted during that Lions game. I don't think that's a game. You don't go into a game and tell a guy he's not going to play regardless of the scenario, because guys can get hurt and different things can happen. So there was unique behavior in that game that leads me to believe that maybe something was going on. Now,
Well, here's the thing. Why even make him active? Wasn't Arthur Motes down for that game? I mean, if you go into that game obviously knowing that you're not going to play James Harrison, why wouldn't you dress a guy that at least you know you could get some special team snaps out of?
I agree. So it doesn't seem to really add up to me. That's why I brought it up. I don't have a good answer to that one, and I think that's the right question. As far as embarrassment, I don't know. I think the Steelers are – I don't really think the Steelers are worried much about that. It's interesting to assess what the fan base – to us to guess what the fan base thinks of James Harrison today. I think the Steeler fans recognize that James is on not the backside of his career. He's on the sunset of his career, and that while he may be able to make some plays, maybe some people do have the illusion that James Harrison is still the defensive player of the year from 2008, James Harrison. But you know, I think we both agree that he can probably be an effective 15-play guy. And, you know, this goes back to our common gripes about how they've handled the kick return duties over the years and how they've done some other personnel decisions. I mentioned last on Wednesday that the Vince Williams, Sean Spence kind of silliness that they a few years ago kind of seemingly having them in on the opposite downs doesn't say that to suggest that the coaching staff's 100% wrong, and we're both fully endorsing the coaching staff in what they've done over the years, fully supportive. But it seems odd the way this has gone this season.
All right, real quick, looking at my notes back at the Lions game, they dressed all their linebackers for that game. They dressed Harrison and Motes in that game. Now, they could have still, if they went into that game knowing Harrison, and remember, Harrison wasn't on the injury report ahead of that game.
No, he was not. He has Wednesday. That's why this was out of the blue on Wednesday.
Okay, so if even pregame, James Harrison was doing jumping jacks and felt something in his back, why wouldn't you make Brian Allen active over James Harrison? You know, the only reason, and he was really the only candidate, I think, to be active other than Harrison, for the sheer fact he plays special teams, he wasn't injured, he wasn't being sat down like Martavis Bryant, and he wasn't a third quarterback. So, why wouldn't you, if you knew pregame that he had tweaked his back, that you throw Brian Allen in there? The only argument I could come up with for why you wouldn't want to make Brian Allen active would be because you don't want want him to have X amount of games on the active list in case you want to save some practice squad eligibility later on down the road.
That's a good guess.
But that's so far. I mean, you know, that's so far because you need. I mean, nowadays, you know, with them loosening the rules with guys that qualify, you know, for the practice squad now, that's a far fetched, reasoning on my part when it comes to Brian Allen. So once again, I go back to the whole thing. There's nothing wrong with James Harrison. They just not wanting to play him right now.
Okay, so there's one guy who's not going to be playing on Sunday, and I'll go back to what I, you know, my common stance here because it's proven me right way more often than wrong. It's Mike Mitchell's been limited Wednesday and Thursday. Again, there's some speculation in the media, which generally means speculation from Mike Mitchell, because talking to Mike Mitchell, that he is, you know, better than even chance to go, but not guaranteed. You know, if he's limited in this game, you know, coming into this game, and this has been 2 weeks, my guess is we won't see Mike Mitchell go. But Dave, he's a toss up here on the coming into Sunday. And the good news is Vance McDonald was our question mark. We knew that Tuitt and Gilbert had worked on Monday. We hadn't heard anything about McDonald, but he hasn't been listed. So all three of the guys, you think about it, these are three important guys on the starting 22, and we continue to have this conversation, and the Steelers are going to have their starting 22 all available here in one of these games, and it looks like they will have, you know, depending on whether it's Jesse James or Vance McDonald, whatever you want to do, but they're going to have all available with the question mark next to Mike Mitchell's name here as we get ready for Sunday.
Yeah, and if Mike Mitchell doesn't dress and look with a short week coming up after this, and if you look, not that you should look past the Colts in any form or fashion, but, you know, if Mike Mitchell's not fully healthy, then he should not play in this game, especially with a short week coming after that. So
And the history shows that guys who do not go on Sundays do not go on Thursdays. So if Mike Mitchell doesn't go here on Sunday, you could probably make a reasonable bet. I would make a reasonable bet that Mike Mitchell will also not go on Thursday.
So then we would probably look forward to Robert Golden starting in his place, Brian Allen dressing in place of Mike Mitchell. That would make sense there as well. So, I think there's really only one question mark maybe on the inactive list. Here's what I think. I think Dobbs is down. I think Mike Mitchell's down. I think James Harrison is down. I think Justin Hunter, Daniel McCullers is down. Gerald Hawkins should be down again. The only question really becomes with that seventh inactive player now is, you know, with Marcus Gilbert back, do you maybe protect
against a possible re-injury?
Yeah, do you dress Matt Filer and sit down Xavier Grimble? Or really, you can make the same argument with Vance McDonald, you know, him coming back from a one-game injury. Do we want to go into this game with just two tight ends? So, should we probably dress Xavier Grimble? I think when push comes to shove, I think Filer will be the seventh inactive, because you'll still have Hubbard, you know, doing his thing as the guy on the sideline there. So I think it's, you know, outside of Mike Mitchell, I think really that's the only kind of question mark is whether or not the final inactive is Matt Filer or Xavier Grimble.
Yeah, or Brian Allen. I think he's still a possibility in that group if you were going to protect against both those positions.
Well, you gotta remember, Robert Golden starts. You're probably gonna want to lighten whatever load he might have on special teams. So, you know, Brian Allen can help you do that on top.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if Golden. I will be surprised if they lighten Golden's load on special teams. That'll be something for us to watch during the game and in the snaps if he does get the start. Okay, so let's actually talk about the Colts and their injury report, because there's a lot going on with the Colts, and I posted an interview. Dan Dakich is a a boisterous is the best way to talk about him. If you're a gentleman or a woman of Dave or my age, you remember Dakich as a player at Indiana, a basketball player under Bobby Knight, and then a coach there. He is a radio personality Dave, is he in Chicago or Indy? I've actually drawn a blank, but in the Midwest, and he's a very popular, loud spoken, not necessarily full of it, not full of BS, but opinionated, loud spoken. And I think, you know, I think pretty good. And he had the Colts GM Chris Ballard on yesterday for 24 minutes. I didn't love the interview. I thought Dakich was a little bit over the top at times. But he had Chris Ballard on, and Chris Ballard's taking over as GM, stepping in for Dave. Help me out with the guy's name, Ryan.
Is it Grigson? You mean
Grigson? Yeah, Ryan Grigson, who had a tire fire at the end of his tenure there. Some of the personnel that moves they've made, not getting an offensive line together, and not kind of protecting Andrew Luck. So there's lots of questions, and there lots of things happening this week. The situation with Andrew Luck going on IR, and the situation with the cornerback Vonta Davis, and whether he was healthy or not, and his groin injury, and then seeking second and third opinions, and then deciding to undergo surgery, and then being released by the Colts. And they've had a ton of injuries. It's a mess, but it's a mess where they've ironically played their two of their best games of the season the last 2 weeks, when they lost to the Bengals on a, with 5 minutes to go, a deflected pass return for a touchdown. And then they won last weekend in a bit of a surprise over the Texans without Deshaun Watson. So Dave, we'll be the Colts guys. And first of all, we're not there day to day, and it would be nice to hear from one of the guys who's there day to day. But when you look at the Colts, is this team going to be in a hellhole here for the next couple of years? Is it enough of a rebuild almost regardless of Andrew Luck, or is there some light at the end of the tunnel for them to be back on their glory days?
Well, I tell you, David, I have a little bit of news for you here before we get in a little bit deeper into this. One of the Colts beat writers or columnist Zach Kiefer has agreed to join the show with us here in about 15 minutes from now. So we'll be able to get him on.
Okay, well, let's skip the in-depth, and let's just go to the injury report and what concerns you before we'll do it blind before we hear from him. T.Y. Hilton shows up on the injury report yesterday with a groin injury. Is there anybody on this Colts team that even gives you pause, offensively or defensively, aside from T.Y. Hilton?
My boy Jack Doyle, right?
There you go.
That's about it. Look, I think T.Y. plays. We'll know probably for sure here in a little bit. We'll ask Zach from the Indianapolis Star what he thinks about that as well, too. T.Y. Hilton's a heck of a threat here. The guy can get loose on you down the field. He's a great third down player. He's lined up almost 39% of the time in the slot here. So we'll ask Zach a little bit about that as well, too. And boy, when you look at their entire injury report, David, this is a team that's in a mess right now. Now, look, Vonta Davis wasn't playing his best football because of the groin injury, and he's missed some time for that. So, him now, not only being hurt but gone off the team, really going to get a good look at Pierre Desir. A lot of Steeler fans who listened to this podcast were high on Desir several years ago. Of course, he spent time with the Colts. I mean, with the Browns. I think he's bounced around elsewhere.
Seattle.
On top of that, he didn't have a bad game, David, against the Texans. Now, he was beat deep by Nuke Hopkins on one of those deep throws, really the only deep throw that Tom Savage hit in that game. That was against, I think, a cover one look. And
Do you know that was Tom Savage's first career touchdown pass?
Yeah, I read that. Amazing.
Four starts, and what I mean, unfortunately, Tom Savage was brutal in that game. But anyway, sorry.
Savage did a good job. One middle safety, one safety in the middle of the field. Savage did a good kind of job of looking him off, and on top of it, safety a little bit late getting over. But Desir was really kind of stride for stride, and that was a fantastically thrown football in there, and ended up in a home run. But Desir overall. I mean, there's a reason why it's taken him this long to get into a starting lineup here. Him and the corner on the other side. To be quite honest with you, neither one should be present a huge challenge for Antonio Brown. And boy, when you look at the Colts and what they've done or haven't been able to do against the deep pass this season. What a mess! I mean, they've given up, I think, the most deep ball completions so far this season, and you know, I really expect the Steelers to attack them. And you know, going back to the injury report once again with the Colts here, they're not going to have Henry Anderson, one of their starting defensive ends for this game, due to, I don't know. Did you hear what they called? I mean, he's officially listed with a throat injury, but they called it Lara something surgery that he's going to have. That certainly does sound painful for Henry Anderson. He's going to be placed on IR probably Saturday. John Simon, you know, one of their starting outside linebackers with a neck injury, hasn't practiced the last two games, and I think he's missed either the two or three games before that, so he's not going to play. They're a mess, David, especially on the defensive side of football. And oh yeah, if they don't have T.Y. Hilton, for Sunday's game,
really bar the door.
Yeah, I mean, it's already going to be an uphill battle for them, obviously, as it is. And if you don't have your best offensive weapon, yikes, you know. So
listen to it. So for those who don't haven't followed the Colts, and understandably, I would assume that's most of our listeners. Let me just give you a little tutorial on the defense here, because it's not amusing if you're a Colts fan, but I think it's kind of interesting. Is there is no Colts starter left from the 2016 opening day starting defense that is currently starting for this team. Listen to the run of names here. And, you know, I guess at some level you're going to call these guys castoffs, but they're all guys in the front seven that you heard of. Marcus Hunt from Cincinnati is starting at one end, and he's a guy who started the season here pretty well as a free agent, getting his first turn as in the rotation. Al Woods, former Steeler via the Tennessee Titans, at nose. Jonathan Hankins from the Giants playing up front. You get into the linebackers, Dave mentioned John Simon. He's kind of a longtime NFL veteran. John Bostic from Detroit. Jabal Sheard out of Pitt. And then with the Browns, and of course with New England, a guy that a couple years ago I thought the Steelers should have had some interest in, had a little bit of a productive time in New England and has since moved on. And then the only draft pick in there is a guy named Antonio Morrison, and Anthony Walker are a couple guys that they've drafted over the past 2 years in middle rounds, but also names that Steeler fans those would be the two guys maybe you haven't heard of. And then in the secondary, it's different guys. Desir was mentioned, and maybe Darius Butler would be somebody that people are aware of. But these are names that have been bounced around and cast off. Parkevious Mingo's another guy. On the draft side, Terrell Basham, Dave, is a guy that out of Ohio that I think we did some time talking about in the preview. It's a kind of a cast off group. And then offensively, Dante Moncrief's the other receiver. Kamir Aiken from Baltimore is a name that people might be familiar with. There's not a soul other than Anthony Costanzo, the former first round pick in 2011, that maybe Ryan Kelly, the first round pick in 2016. The offensive line people probably haven't heard of. And then, of course, Jacoby Brissett's a quarterback. He's played fair. And then Frank Gore, the guy I like, Dave, out of this whole group of guys is Marlon Mack. If it had been me last year, knowing only what I knew at the time of the draft, I probably would have taken Marlon Mack ahead of James Conner. I think kind of an explosive back, maybe change of pace guy who out of South Florida that we talked about going into the draft as well. More of a bowling ball type of physically kind of a 5'11", 215 type of guy. But he has had some productivity for the Colts over the last few weeks, and you got to think Frank Gore is on his last leg. So that's kind of just a brief look at the roster before we get to one of the beat writers here. But it is not you can see why possibly they made the change at general manager, aside from all the internal conflict that they've had with that organization.
Yeah, when you watch them on tape, David, that offensive line. Look, I laugh about this, but you know we've seen the Steelers defense go and get some banged up offensive lines already a couple times this season and not do overly great against them, right?
Yeah. You know? Well, certainly the Detroit game was the last time out.
Yeah, and then you go back to the Chicago game. Jacksonville, I think, weren't they missing a guy or two on the offensive line? It just goes to show you, David, that backups in this league, a lot of them probably deserve to be in the league, and you better have a deep roster. That said, when you look at I know Anthony Costanzo is a big name for them, but Ryan Kelly, I think, is by far their best player, yeah. Player, yeah. At center there, and that
is Kelly out of Notre Dame. I'm just drawing a blank. Is that where he went? I was trying to remember. I can look it up.
No, he went to Alabama. Ryan Kelly.
Alabama.
You're
right.
Thinking about. You're thinking about. Were you thinking about? Was it Zach Martin?
Maybe.
But Ryan Kelly went to Alabama there. So. Yep. And you hit on Mac. The Steelers, didn't they send James Saxon down there? And I think we wrote about them putting him through a workout and all. Mike Tomlin, of course, on Tuesday said they took a look at Mac. Yeah, I like Mac, David, and we're going to ask we'll ask our beat writer about this as well, too. Is it about time for him to maybe start getting more of the share of carries? Because God bless Frank Gore. Frank Gore is 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Marlon Mack, I think they have something like 6 explosive plays out of their or 5 explosive plays. I think Mack is responsible for this year, something like 3 via the run and 2 via dump off passes. He does give you a lot more explosiveness, and you have to wonder maybe his pass protection or something like that is something that's keeping him off the field. Jacoby Brissett. We'll talk a little bit more about this after our interview, but strong arm guy. I mean, if there's one thing that you can say about Jacoby Brissett is he can get that football down the field. Some nice passes I thought he made against the Texans, some hole shots. And if you remember, the Steelers had some problems with kind of those hole shots against the Lions. But with that said, Jacoby Brissett is not Matthew Stafford. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, Dave, why don't we take a quick break so we'll get set up to do this, and it'll be seamless as we'll get into our Indianapolis Colts beat writer. We'll preview the Colts. We'll come back. We'll take a look around the NFL and get to our picks. Okay, welcome back. As we said, pleased to be joined by Zach Kiefer, who covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star. You can follow Zach on Twitter at Z Kiefer, his last name Keefer. Zach, thanks for taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Happy to do it.
Zach, let's. I like to start at 30,000 feet, and this is an organization that's seen its fair share of turmoil over the last 18 months, led with the situation in the front office and Gregson and where things were headed and whether there was a power struggle with Gregson and Pagano a couple of years ago. And then apparently they hug it out. They both come back last year. The Andrew Luck injury, Gregson being terminated, and Ballard comes in. I listened at length to the interview with Ballard and Dan Dakich yesterday, talking about where things are. It all starts with the Irsay family and what's going on up there with Jim Irsay. Just give me your sense of the organization, and is there as much turmoil as there appears maybe from the outside?
Wow, you just kind of recapped the last, 4 years of my life. So, that's not bad for 30 seconds. It's really, really bad when we're at week 10 and there's more talk off the field than there is on the field. But what's the point of talking about the Colts on the field, right? I mean, they're a disaster. It starts with Jim Irsay, and he put his foot in his mouth, as he tends to do this summer. You go back to last January when he announced the news. This is the team statement. I mean, they didn't even release a statement besides his Twitter, where he said, Andrew Luck, by the way, just had shoulder surgery. He'll be ready for the season, exclamation point. Now, he doubled down on that notion several times. And I don't want to fault him completely for that, because the team expected him to be back, right? They did not go out and sign a quarterback in the offseason. They thought about it. They didn't do it. They expected him to be back between weeks 2 and 4. So they were going to live it, you know, with Scott Tolzien for maybe a week or two. Obviously, as everybody knows, that's not the case. He's not going to throw any footballs this year, and that's a problem because this team isn't very good. It's not very good even with Andrew Luck, and without him, it's really bad. So Andrew Luck's situation really makes Jim Irsay look really bad, and the fans are really angry, and I don't blame them. Chris Ballard, you know, poor guy, showed up and got this bomb dropped on his lap. I mean, this is not his doing. He's not the guy who trotted Luck out behind a really bad offensive line for 4 years, 5 years, and nearly got him killed. He's got the job of cleaning it up, though, and that's going to take some time. But look, fans are unhappy. They're really unhappy with Jim Irsay. There's rumors. There's speculation. There's unfounded reports. There's erroneous reports. And we haven't even gotten to the football team yet. So, yeah, it's just a long year. And the fact that Jim Irsay is not saying anything right now at all does not help.
Zach, I hate to go down, as you say, this track that's not related to what's going on the field, because that's what we like to do. But whatever happened with the Jim Irsay and the garbage bag of prescription pills and everything else with him? I mean, is the guy obviously he's not a, I don't know. I shouldn't say. I mean, is the guy a stable guy? Is he anything more than the son of the guy who used to own the team? Let me ask it that way.
Yeah, he is. He's very different from his dad, Bob Irsay. This is obviously a very nuanced story, right? And it's hard to sort of explain it.
Sure.
Jim Irsay grew up in the game. I mean, he worked his way up from a ball boy to a GM to an owner. So he knows football. He is a football man in a way a lot of owners are not. And he knows the game, and he knows the salary cap. And you talk to people who know football, general managers, owners, and the like. This is not a side pet project for him where it just, refills his bank account. No, he's a football guy. Now, that's not to say that he doesn't have issues, and the arrest a couple of years ago speaks to that. There's a lot of unknown with him and with how he spends his time. But the fact of the matter is that he absolutely understands the importance of Andrew Luck to this franchise. He's their hope for the future. And I don't believe that relationship has been strained at all. Look, I mean, not a lot of guys, I don't think, make the decision that Jim Irsay did in 2011 where he cut Peyton Manning. I mean, it just sounds weird saying that, right? He cut Peyton Manning. This is a guy that has a statue up outside the stadium right now. And, I mean, if there was ever an athlete in any sport who was uncuttable, you could make the argument that it's Peyton Manning. But he did that because it was in the right move. It was the right move at the time, as hard as it was, for the franchise. So, yeah, there's a lot behind the scenes that Jim Irsay does that he doesn't get credit for as well. But right now, these tweets and these statements that he made to us and others throughout the spring and summer really make him look bad, because it gives the conspiracy theorists, room to run, because he hasn't played football yet this year. And it's just a disaster of a season.
Zach, Jack Doyle is probably one of my top five players in the NFL to watch. I mean, how can he not be kind of a blue collar, kind of guy? I've always been partial to the tight ends that can do it all. And that's Jack Doyle. I mean, you line him up in the backfield, you split him out, you line him up in the line of scrimmage, he gets the job done. We know he's going to be, he's going to have to be a big part of what they do against the Steelers on Sunday. Of course, T.Y. Hilton is the other guy. He's the deep threat. Everybody listening to this podcast knows who T.Y. Hilton is. He did, however, show up on the injury report Thursday as limited with a groin. Is there any thought whatsoever that T.Y. Hilton's not going to be ready for the game on Sunday? And what are your thoughts on Jack Doyle?
Yeah, T.Y.'s playing Sunday. He'll be out there. Hey, look, Jack Doyle is a football player. And I mean that in a good way, because, Frank Gore told me last year, he said, look, I've been in this league 13 years. there's not a lot of guys I've had that are better teammates than Jack Doyle. I mean, they love this guy. He is blue collar in every sense of the word. He only had like 20 catches as a high school senior. You know, he got one scholarship offer. He wasn't drafted in the NFL, was cut by the Titans, landed on the Colts, you know, was sort of like a special teams fourth stringer for a couple of years, sort of, you know, earned his respect the old fashioned way more and more. Then he became tight end three. Then he became tight end two last year and balled out and had the most catches of a Colts tight end in like 6 years. And then this year, I mean, he's on pace to have the most Colts, the most catches by a Colts tight end, the second most in the history of the franchise. So that's ridiculous. I mean, he is just as steady as they come. He had a hiccup early in the season. He had a couple fumbles on a road game in Tennessee, and that was sort of the first real mistakes he's ever made on the field that we could see. He is absolutely beloved in the locker room, beloved in the city. But I will tell you this, if you're the Steelers, you want to let Jack Doyle get his catches and you want to take T.Y. Hilton out of the game. Jack Doyle is death by paper cuts, right? I mean, the Bengals let him get 12 catches for 120. None of them were more than 10 or 15 yards. He just, you know, he's the safety net for Jacoby Brissett over the middle. And if you're the Steelers, you give them that. You just take away the deep threat that can break your defense, and that's T.Y. Hilton. The Steelers have not had a lot of trouble with T.Y. Hilton in the last couple of years. If you bracket him, you can take him out of the game. I mean, he's had three monster games this year where he's had 150-plus receiving yards, and those are the only three games the Colts have won. So the formula, if you're Pittsburgh, is pretty simple.
When you look at their running back and their running game, not only this year, but, you know, look, it seems like Steelers-Colts is kind of a yearly thing right now, so we're real familiar with what they do offensively. Frank Gore, however, you know, bless his heart, he's three yards in a cloud of dust right now, you know, at this stage of his career. Now, Marlon Mack obviously hasn't seen a lot of playing time, but I think somewhere to the neighborhood of 50-something carries, and he's really been their most explosive, you know, backfield player. I think something to the tune of 5 to 6 explosive plays, a couple of those coming via catches. Is the fact that, you know, you see it with rookie running backs, and of course well, the Steelers have with James Conner, you know, not only with Le'Veon Bell being a star, but James Conner pass protection is one of the things that's preventing him from getting a few more carries. Is this the case with Marlon Mack or you know, halfway through the season now, is it time for the Colts to let Marlon Mack have the lion's share of the carries because of what he can do out in space?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. It's pass protection. I mean, clearly he's a big play guy, and the Colts were dead last in the league last year in chunk plays on the run game. I think they had 4 runs of 20 yards or more like the whole year, and 3 of them were by the quarterback number 12, so that's like ridiculous. Mack easily surpassed that in half a season. He can run. He can catch. He's gotten the end zone several times. But if you go back to last week, they were in Houston, and the Colts were pretty much dominating the game. Tom Savage was really bad early. And the Texans jumped back in and off a fumble, and they returned it for a touchdown because Mack blew his assignment. I mean, it was clear pass protection breakdown, and the rookie blew it. And that's why you can't throw him out there every play. And they're working through that, but this is not the first time that's happened. So he needs to get better at that. And in terms of Frank Gore, he's like, what, 7th all-time in rushing? I mean, the guy's in football purgatory right now. The stats don't really tell the story. They've had so many different offensive lines. There's nowhere to run. He's actually running just fine. Like, I'm not going to put anything on Frank Gore. When there's space, he makes guys miss. When there's not space, he still makes guys miss. And I'm talking, that's avoiding a 3-yard loss and getting back to the line of scrimmage or something like that. So, it'd be amazing to see what Frank Gore could do on a different team. You know, I know there was some interest in him at the trade deadline, and the Colts were willing to sort of get him out to get him to a better spot. It didn't happen. That would have been great for Frank because he doesn't deserve to be on this crappy team right now.
Yeah, before I turn you back over to David real quick, it's worth pointing out that 45 of the 208 carries by Colts running backs this season have resulted in either no gains or lost yardage. 21
about right.
21.7%. Okay, David.
Zach, looking at the quarterback position and the uncertainty with Andrew Luck, you know, good on Ballard for going out and getting Jacoby Brissett and rolling the dice on him. That was a You know, I don't know exactly what the story was with Dorsett. He hasn't done a lot in New England, but he's a former first-round pick, pretty early to cut ties with him. So, you know, I give Ballard a lot of credit to find a guy that's – look, the Colts have won a couple games, and I don't know if they've played their two best games the last two games, but obviously they've been in these last two games.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, so I give him high marks for that. Look, Jacoby Brissett's never going to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. My question is, with the uncertainty around Andrew Luck, if the Colts finish the season with four or five wins and are drafting in the top five, there are teams in the top five that may not be looking for a quarterback. There are going to be teams looking around. If there's a big-name quarterback, one of the guys that people have talked about there, is quarterback going to be somewhere that they could go in the first round? Or, and I realize this is, based on we're all, putting our finger, licking our finger and putting it up in the air to guess where Luck's right. going to be. But is that a possibility?
So they're going to look at everything. I know that for a fact. And this is not just me saying that. They're going to look at everything. But I do know this. Jacoby Brissett is under contract for a couple more years, and that's a really nice thing to have. This team needs a backup quarterback, a capable backup quarterback in the worst way. Right? And that's a really hard thing to find. I mean, you guys know that in Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger going out, a couple times in the last couple of years, and the Colts know that. I mean, hell, they went to L.A. in week one, and you don't think the Rams are very good back then, and they got beat 49-9 or something. It was Scott Tolzien's first pass was a pick six. It was a disaster. The whole preseason was a disaster. So the Brissett move came late, but it did kind of save the season. I think they move forward with Brissett. I think they're going to get calls from teams trying to trade for Brissett, and I think they say no because they need him in the worst way. This year tells them that. I don't see them taking a quarterback in the draft. Definitely not very high, because I really believe the Colts believe Andrew Luck will be back for 2018 for the first week. There's no indications he's having another surgery. He was cleared to throw. He was practicing for 2 weeks. We saw him out there throwing the ball 30, 40 yards. That tells me the surgery originally was sound. Everything was structurally okay. He was strengthening it and he was cleared to play and he was good enough to return to the field. It's the setback that really, screwed everything up and screwed up the plans for this season. I think he needs to work through that, get the strength to the point where he doesn't get sore after every throwing session. And he can play. And so the good news, he's got 10 months to do that. I don't see them taking a quarterback early, but boy, if they do, that's an alarm bell.
Yeah. On the defensive side of the ball, earlier in the show, we kind of previewed the front seven, and these are names that for me and a lot of our listeners, we've seen all these guys play. We just haven't seen any of them play in a Colts uniform. Antonio Morrison's the only guy I'm not familiar with in that front seven. Is anybody in the front seven stood out? I mean, look, these guys, I don't want to call them all retreads. A lot of guys are just getting an opportunity in second contracts, but a lot of these guys are retreads. Anybody in that group are really quality, having a quality season?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know the offense you guys have out there in Pittsburgh. So, I mean, tops in the league, if not, so the advantage obviously sides with Pittsburgh. The one thing I will say, if the Colts have a chance, it's going to be with a guy like Jabal Sheard on the edge. Because in the last three games against Pittsburgh, the score is like 1-0. The one thing the Colts never did was get to Big Ben. I mean, they never even breathed on him. So he just sat back in the pocket and threw it to whoever he wanted and racked up 15 touchdowns or something. So if they can get to Big Ben and make his life a little bit miserable, they'll have a chance. They haven't done that in the past. They don't have anybody that can cover 84 in the back end. I mean, Vontae Davis, I don't even want to go into that, but he won't be out there Sunday, obviously. So, the only way this is a single digit game, even in the third quarter, is if the Colts can get some pressure at the quarterback. And I'm not sure they can, but Jabal Sheard is a guy that could do that. John Simon's been their best defensive player, and he's been out 2 weeks. He'll miss a third this week with a stinger. So they're just running out of options.
Yeah, when you look at, you have to feel bad for Henry Anderson. That sounds painful, whatever he dealt with. He'll be placed on IR at the end of the week there. They are running out of options here for sure defensive. I guess Marcus Hunt's going to start in his place. When you look at that back end, though, David and I were just talking before having you on. Pierre Desir is a guy that a lot of Steeler fans were high on the year, he came out. Obviously, he's bounced around since then. When you look at the tape on the the game against the Texans, I didn't think he played that bad, even on the touchdown that he gave up to Nuke Hopkins there. You know, very, very.
Oh, that was a great catch. Yeah.
Very, very tight coverage there. Here's my question, and you, I mean, we, you know it. You already said it. We know it. Nobody's going to be able to cover Antonio Brown throughout the night, and they obviously probably aren't going to have anybody follow him around either. But who's going to play in the? You know, I think Quincy Wilson is banged up. Who's going to play in the slot when the Steelers roll out their 11 personnel? And can a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster also be, you know, have a great matchup in this game because of that?
Yeah, he will. The slot corner is going to be Nate Harrison. He's a rookie out of Temple. He's played well, but you sort of grade rookies on a different scale. The two corners are going to be Desir and Rashawn Melvin. Rashawn Melvin's been one of the underrated players, probably in football, maybe definitely the Colts. Bounced around with five or six teams, been injured, playing his butt off this year. He's having a career year. Desir has been really solid, too. You know, they have not seen a big drop-off between Vontae Davis and him, and the big reason is because Vontae was playing hurt for so long. He just wasn't himself. So the corners have been okay, but then you go to a rookie cornerback in the slot, and the safeties have been bad. So it's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, they've done okay the last couple of weeks. They held A.J. Green in check for the most part in Cincinnati. He had a great touchdown catch that you just give him credit for because he made a great play. The coverage was there. Same thing last week with Hopkins. But, man, if Hopkins had a quarterback throwing to him in the first three quarters, the Texans win that by double digits. And the Pittsburgh's quarterback's pretty good, so I don't think we'll have an issue there.
I'm just curious, is Quincy Wilson early read on him? You know, look, out of Florida, he had the two corners coming out, Tabor and Wilson. Is he guys going to play in this league? Is he going to be a successful corner?
I think he is. It's going to take some time. He was a healthy scratch one game, which drew a lot of criticism. You know, how are you sitting down a second round pick? He hasn't practiced well. But the coaches, they're very hesitant with him. He's got this knee issue that's been lingering all season long. He has played well when he did play well. You have to go back to week two, but he did play well against the Arizona Cardinals. But this year, it seems like a lost year for him. I mean, a second round pick out of Florida who flashed in the preseason, he just hasn't been able to get on the field.
Tell us about Adam Vinatieri. I mean, he's still been around. Certainly he has seen the highest of the highs during his career. He's going to be a Hall of Fame kicker, which there's only, I guess, Jan Stenerud's the only guy in there. I can't remember if Morton got in this past year. But
yeah, he did.
Is Vinatieri, how does he associate with the team? I mean, Christ, he's as old as I am. And it's obviously things are in flux. We know oftentimes special teams guys are a little bit can be a little bit removed from the team. What's Vinatieri's role in the locker room, et cetera?
Yeah, it's like no kicking situation I've ever been around. I mean, he is absolutely one of the most respected guys in the locker room, as he should be. I mean, I wrote a story today that came out. I mean, this guy's been in the league 22 years. His first coach in the NFL was Bill Parcells. I mean, that's some serious stuff. And, I mean, he tackled Herschel Walker in a game his rookie year. Herschel Walker.
He hawked him down, too, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And Parcells told me later that that's when it really cemented him as a player, not just a kicker on that team. That's when he earned the respect. Adam is chasing the records. I mean, he's getting closer and closer to Morton's record. He moved into second place all time last week in points. There's been no drop off in his performance. He's kicking 94% from the field this year. He hit a 53-yarder last week that not a lot of people are talking about, but was huge because it made it a 6-point game and didn't allow the Texans to kick a field goal at the end. So the story today is pretty crazy though. This guy, I mean, his fourth game of his NFL career, he was 3-for-7 on kicks. Parcells basically told him, if you go out in the field and miss this, don't even come back to the locker room. You're going to get cut. And if he gets cut, he doesn't make it in the NFL because no one's hiring a kid who's, you know, 3-for-8.
Tell me that.
He's going to go to medical school. Yeah, so he's done.
Tell me again, what's the story? Tell me again.
Yeah, I tweeted out this morning. So basically, I mean, it came down to one kick in his fourth game of his rookie year. Bill Parcells and everybody on the sideline basically knew if he misses it, he's gone. He's never going to play in the NFL again. No one's going to hire this kid who you know, wasn't very good in college and started 3 for 8 on field goals in his NFL career. So without that kick going in, which it did, there's no Super Bowls with the Patriots. There's no 22-year career. That's there's no great. Gold jacket, none of that.
So the story's in the Indianapolis Star today. We'll tweet it out.
Yeah, definitely send it out there. It's it blows my mind. You got to read the quotes from Parcells. He was great talking about it.
Fantastic. So give us a read on this one. Look, Steelers come in as 10-point favorites, as you probably are well aware. If there is a common criticism of Mike Tomlin and this Steelers team, it's that they do not play well against teams that they're supposed to beat, and they don't play well particularly against teams that they're supposed to beat. They're 7 or more point favorites on the road. Now, you know, we can define that a lot of different ways, but it's been a stumbling block. What do the Colts have to do to win this game? If I take the turnover answer out of the equation.
Yeah, but that stat doesn't include previous games against the Colts, because I don't know if you guys have seen the last three games.
Oh, yeah.
I think the scores were 51-34. That was with Andrew Luck at quarterback. 45-10. That was with Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback. And it was 28-7 on Thanksgiving last year. And that was with Scott Tolzien at quarterback. This will be a double-digit game at least, if not more. Brissett is a great young quarterback, but he makes mistakes. And a good defense will bring those out of him. We'll see it. I don't see the Colts moving the ball consistently at all. I don't see T.Y. Hilton being a factor, because he only seems to tear apart bad defenses. He never seems to tear about great defenses. And I just cannot see the Colts consistently slowing down Bell and Big Ben and Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown has killed the Colts the last couple of times. He'll probably do some of that on Sunday as well.
Zach, we like to throw scores out. If you care to, you want to give us a score?
Yeah, I'll go 31-14.
Okay. I got to tell you, Zach, so we've been doing this 8 years, and of course, in the 8 years, the Steelers have played at least every team twice, and they through the scheduling quirks, they've gotten the Colts almost every year. And
yeah.
We've had a lot of beat writers on here. We've never been able to nail down a Colts guy for a variety of reasons, but man, awesome job. Just fantastic. We're lucky to have you on, and we will keep you in the Rolodex going forward. Thanks so much for your time.
No, happy to do it, and enjoy the rest of the Steelers season. It should be a good and long one.
Okay, Dave, that was that's what you call a win. Kind of a guy we hadn't had on before, and we were scrambling a little bit because we got one guy canceled on us and couldn't confirm with another in terms of times. But man, Zach Kiefer, put him on your Twitter follow and read that Vinatieri story. I just tweeted it out for those who may have trouble finding it, but good, really good stuff from him. And obviously his take on where things are going here is similar to ours.
Boy, we went from wondering, you know, being upset, not going to have a beat writer, to have probably, I don't know, top five guest of all time, maybe. Just goes to show you how crazy it is. So good on him. It was very enjoyable to listen to him. Got a lot of insight there. So, you know, when we look, continuing on, looking, you know, forward to this game, I don't know what we haven't covered and what he didn't cover. I think you do what you have to do to shut down T.Y. Hilton. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of Hilton on Hilton, if you will, because I think they're going to be smart and try to move Hilton around a lot in this game. So probably a third of the snaps or a third of the routes that he runs, I think you're going to see Mike Hilton try to get him in coverage and see what, you know, how they try to give him help on the back end of things. And, you know, as I wrote on Thursday, David, there's no, absolutely no reason or shouldn't be a reason to worry about the Colts running game. I mean, if the Steelers even give up as much as one explosive run in this game, they should be ashamed of themselves. They should be able to dominate this offensive line, get these running backs to the ground, and we should see the Colts in a lot of third and long situations, and then you just sit back and hope and wait. You know, that Jacoby Brissett makes a mistake, and I'm with Zach as well, too. Go ahead and let Jack Doyle, if Jack Doyle's going to be the guy to beat you, make it be because he had 15 catches for 150 yards and 2 scores. Because he's, as much as I like Jack Doyle, He's not a yak guy. I mean, he's
Right. He's Miller wasn't going to take you for Jesse James isn't going to take you for 20 yards unless it's a blown coverage. So
right.
I tweeted this out on Monday that you stop T.Y. Hilton, you stop the Colts. They're going to win this game if they contain T.Y. Hilton. You're going to have to bracket coverage him. If people remember the game last year in Indy, 28-7 Steeler win, that Steelers got off to a big game early. This is a game where Ladarius Green caught just a couple balls, but both about 30-yard gains, so he became a factor in the offense. There was a play down the middle where Mike Mitchell came and drilled, I think it was T.Y. Hilton at the goal line, on what would have been a huge gain. And without Mike Mitchell, it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers deploy the defensive backfield to focus. Look, Dante Moncrief's a capable number two, number three receiver. And then we're talking about, just guys, the rest of them. So T.Y., it's a little bit like Antonio Brown. Teams know the Steelers are going to throw to Antonio Brown, yet he gets his. So they're not going to, if T.Y. Hilton's playing and healthy, he's not going to go 0 for 0. He's going to have 5 or 6 catches. It's just you want those 5 or 6 catches to be for 60 yards and no touchdowns. And if that's the case, the Steelers shouldn't have trouble. So it would be interesting to see how they use help over the top and how they set things up for this one, Dave. So why don't we get into a couple of NFL things and then give our picks since we're hitting the hour mark here. And just one is, and this might be an entertaining game to see this, but the news came out that the Thursday game the Steelers play against the Titans, they're going to use that overhead camera that came into play in the New England Atlanta game on Monday night. A few weeks back, because of the fog in New England, they needed a camera closer to the action, and the response was so positive. And obviously, the viewership on Thursday is less than it is on a Sunday night or Monday night. That they're going to experiment a bit. With this, they're going to do the majority of the game from that kind of behind the quarterback angle. Dave, is that something you're looking forward to?
Anything that shows me a good shot of most of all 22 players on the field at one time, I'm all for. I think the best thing until the all 20, because there is the gap between the game and, a good 24 hours sometimes even longer until the all 22 comes out, is at least you can go back through the game and maybe assign a little bit of blame. You know what I'm saying? I think it allows for better instant reaction. How's that sound?
I think that's right. And one of the things that was, I've mentioned this a few times, is, the benefit of being in the stadium is to see how everybody's lined up on the field before the ball is snapped. And that's the primary benefit for me. And I like sitting up high and being able to dissect that type of stuff. You get a little bit more of this. I wish, on some of the side angles, the normal angles, that they would pull you back a little bit so you could see. And I mentioned this in one of the games earlier where they had some camera stuff, and they were because of what Tony Romo was showing on CBS broadcast on pointing things out. He was showing things in the defensive secondary, so they had to, because of what he was talking about, take a more expanded view of the field. And that was a big positive of that. And this will give us some of those looks as well. Of course, this is not the game this Sunday. This will be the Thursday night game against the Titans next week.
Absolutely. And like I said, the more angles I can get, the better. And now all we need, David, is a college football all 22 service. You would think, man, with would you imagine how well that something like that would do? Now, I obviously don't know the numbers of NFL Game Pass, but geez, I mean, it's got to be on up there for the people that subscribe to that. I would be willing to shell out another $100 to $200 a season for FBS, all 22 and that kind of thing. So it makes you want. They obviously have the tape. I guess it's just a matter of each team getting on page and submitting it and cutting it and all like that, I guess would be. But if they got some money for it, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. So let's last night's game. The decimating, I guess, is for the Seahawks. Richard Sherman out for the season with a ruptured Achilles tendon. They were missing Earl Thomas. I don't know how quickly he's due back, but Cam Chancellor also left at the very end of that game. I didn't see an update on his status, but offensive linemen on both teams getting dinged up. Dave, I was surprised. I thought with what Seattle did against Houston 2 weeks ago offensively, they would get things together. But it's just so clear how much of a mess their offensive line is that it's a massive problem. Russell Wilson's still a bit of a Houdini. He's got that long extended warm-up wind-up that they commented on, but he still gets the ball out pretty quick, and he's an incredible athlete. And then on Arizona's side, the kid from Michigan State, Drew Stanton, is who we know he is. So they're inept offensively. Seattle stacked the box to stop the run. But their defense looked fast and flying to the ball as well. So the under was the play. And for those who weren't watching, Arizona got literally a meaningless touchdown or a game that was 12 points or 13 points or 12 points. They got a touchdown with 40 seconds left, and the extra point was blocked. And depending on when you got the line, it was 5.5, 6, or 6.5. And the extra point made the game a 6-point game for Seattle instead of a 5-point game for Seattle. So lots, as we've seen in a couple of these nationally televised games, literally stuff in the last seconds impacting things. Are either of these teams, A, playoff teams, B, a team that anybody should worry about in the playoffs?
Well, Seattle, I think, still going to be there in the end. I think they are a playoff team. But, boy, losing Sherman. Have you seen the laundry list of players that left that game last night, especially for the Seahawks? They had just got Dwayne Brown, and he left early with what was it, an ankle injury there. I think the most concerning aspect with them is some potential losses on the defensive side of the ball there, and they just become a defense now. They just not, you know, sure they have some pass rushers, you know, with Frank, what's his last name? Drawing a blank, kid out of Michigan there, but Mingo, Mingo had a great pass rush kind of in the second half of that game, sat the tackle down on his ass, but that Cardinals offensive line really isn't all that, if you know what I mean. I think Seattle's a playoff team, David, but I don't fear them. I'll put it to you that way. Russell Wilson will make some plays. And what about that play that he had on that third and whatever play, just
insane. Lucky, but I mean, it still happens. So
that's Fran Tarkin and stuff right there.
That's great analogy. Yep.
I mean, that you're just running for your life back there, and then all of a sudden, you know, 9 seconds after the ball snapped, you find a guy down the field along the sideline. He runs another 20 yards after it. But I don't fear them, David. No, I don't think I don't.
The Rams win that division.
Man, how can they not now? Right? I mean, Arizona's just a team. Seattle is beatable. You look at what the Rams have left in that defense. That defense is going to keep them in games this year. So, yeah, I think Rams, how shocking is that? I think they can win that division this year.
Yes. And this is probably a bit under the radar from where we sit in the AFC and the AFC North. But if that happens, the Rams story from last year to this year, right, might be kind of one of the biggest turnarounds we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, it's pretty shocking.
I mean, he's got to win Coach of the Year, right? I mean,
just book it. Done. It's just not even a conversation. There have been a lot of guys doing good jobs, but that's over.
And what does this say about Wade Phillips? I hate to keep talking about him, and I've done it, you know, even when he was with Denver and all like that. The guy just has a way of being able to put the square pegs in the round holes and make it fit what he does. And, yeah, they have talent over there. But, you know, this was supposed to be like a two-year kind of transformation into what Wade Phillips likes to do. But, man, they really are playing good football. So, yeah, now, look, when they get into the playoffs with a rookie quarterback like Goff and where things are a little bit more even, they're going to have their problems. But, yeah, whereas we sit here right now, I expect them to make the playoffs, and I never would have thought that, you know, at the start of the season. It just goes to show you too, what was the majority perception of Goff after last season, David?
I never would use that term, but it was being thrown around liberally that he was a bust, and how could you pick him in front of Wentz? It was, people were really making the Peyton Manning the kid Ryan Leaf comparison. Like, you completely missed on one of the first two guys.
Now, look, he's obviously got, I mean, a lot of games left to play, but, I mean, and his tape was bad last season. But it just goes to show you sometimes you got it, you know, sometimes these quarterbacks take some time and the right tutor and the right system and all. And he's doing a lot of things that he did well over at, you know, in college, seeing a lot of RPOs, making things a lot easier on him. And that I kind of want to dovetail that back into a conversation we had, you know, on Wednesday about Joshua Dobbs. Let's not throw that baby out with the bathwater just yet. Yeah, he's probably not going to become even a starting quarterback in the league, talking about Dobbs, but let's not analyze what he did. I mean, let's not be too critical of what he did during one preseason with the team. All right, carry on.
Okay, and I think the guy you were looking for was Deion Jordan for the Seahawks. Barkevious Mingo will be playing with the Colts this week.
Deion Jordan, you are right. Go back and look at that. I'm sorry, I got too confused. Go back.
Yeah,
and look.
Well, it's easy. Both those guys were top picks that were bust. Deion Jordan with the Dolphins and Mingo with the Browns went to New England, and he will be playing for the Colts this week. So you know, another guy to keep an eye on. Jordan gets a chance with. And Dwight Freeney, how about, you know, ageless Dwight Freeney able to come in there and you know, through three games, contribute to that defense.
What a spin move that guy has.
Yes, he does.
Oh,
he
you
does.
Know, real quick, wrapping up what Zach said, you know, the Sunday game will feature the youngest and oldest player in the league in Vinatieri versus Juju Smith-Schuster. How great is that?
Good one. Yeah, good one. All right, so looking at games this weekend, Dave, we've got Peru, New Zealand, South Africa, Senegal, and Nigeria, Algeria going on today. So let's get to those.
not with my money, you won't.
Yeah, that's a little World Cup qualifying. We've also got Italy, Sweden. If anybody's interested in some afternoon soccer at 2:45 on Fox Sports 1, Italy, Sweden, obviously a home and home over the next 3 days. For the soccer fans out there. Okay, let's get to the NFL. Dave snuck one on me with the wide line at 6.5 last night. I had the Seahawks. I really don't care because I really had the Seahawks at 5.5, so we'll enjoy that. This is an interesting week in the NFL. The byes are to Baltimore, Kansas City, Oakland, and the Philadelphia Eagles. We're just getting to the end of the bye schedule. Everybody's going to be back on track here in a week or so. It's a great viewing weekend of sports. And if you're looking for a list of everything to watch, in my Twitter feed yesterday, I went through kind of all the things that were on national TV, you know, starting with yesterday's television. You know, not a huge slate of things tonight, but starting with tomorrow, a great college football day tomorrow, and then the slate of games Sunday. So if you want an easy guide, go check that out. So, Dave, the 1 o'clock games, the Vikings and the Redskins, this is a really big game. The Redskins maybe salvaged their season with a win in Seattle last week to get to 4-4 in a tough division. The Vikings have the harder road than the Lions, but they've got a big lead on them right now. They put Sam Bradford on IR. Teddy Bridgewater comes back. He's not going to play this week. The Redskins are a dog, Dave, at home, a 1.5-point dog. What do you think?
That Minnesota defense is good, though, right? I mean, and
one of the three best, I think, in the league.
And Case Keenum's been playing well. I'm going to have to, 1.5 points, dog. I'll go ahead and go with Minnesota covering here. I don't feel great about this game because of Kirk Cousins, but give me Minnesota laying the points on the road.
Yeah, I'm going to ride my Kirk Cousins love affair with, and I'll take the points with the Redskins. Dave, if I told you it was week 10 in the NFL and the Packers were going to Chicago and Chicago's a 5.5-point favorite, other than if somebody said, you know, tell me the background to how that happened, we'd both say, well, Aaron Rodgers is out. And then I'd say, what else? Because something else has to be going on for the Packers to be a 5.5-point dog going into Chicago. And it goes back to, you know, the Bears and the Jags aren't, you know, the bottom feeders that we thought they were when the Steelers played them. I'm not trying to make any excuses for the Steelers' losses, particularly that game in Chicago. They absolutely should have won. Trubisky's been the definition of a caretaker. They run the ball. Dave, 5.5 just seems like too much to me. Hundley, he hadn't been good, but 5.5 just seems like too much. I'll take the Packers.
Yeah, I'll take the Packers plus the points, too. They got to find a way to start getting the ball to Jordy, though, a little bit more. They've absolutely got to do that. And look, Bennett's no longer there. They've had some tight end issues, Green Bay, that is. But lean on the run and try to feed the ball to Jordy and, you know, a few of those other wide receivers. Let them make plays. Get the ball to them out in space. But I'm with you. Give me Green Bay plus the 5.5 on the road.
The team that I've seen play the least snaps this entire season is certainly the Los Angeles Chargers. I just haven't seen any of their stuff. They go to Jacksonville this week. The Chargers, you know, their season's kind of, you know, they need to win a bunch of games in a row to be in the conversation in the AFC. The Jags looking to win that division. They're a 3.5-point favorite at home. The Chargers, Dave, have played well coming east recently, and they've been in their games. They had one, I think they had one bad loss. But I'm still going to go with this Jags defense and take the Jags minus 3.5.
Boy, this smells like a rat here for me. You know, the way that Jaguars defense is playing so far this season, and you know what? They're telling Bortles, just don't lose the game. And I thought that would happen. You know, I took the Bengals, I think, last week. One of these times, the real something's got to happen with that Jacksonville offense. And look, I know they're going to get Fournette back, but I smell a rat here, David, because I'm going to take the Chargers plus the 3.5.
Okay, the Jets go to the Bucs, and boy, I keep thinking the Bucs are going to play good football, and I'm not sure they're not better off with Ryan Fitzpatrick here in the short term to get this passing offense going. I can't not take them getting points at home. The Jets, and God bless the Jets, their defense has been much better than expected. The two safeties they drafted, Jamal Adams and the other kid, have stepped right in and started. Jamal Adams will be in that conversation as well in the top defensive rookies. But I'm going to take the Bucs plus points at home.
What are you showing with them?
2.5.
I didn't – Fitz versus McMahon. I won't be watching that one. Give me the Jets are playing well. I can't believe it. Give me the Jets to cover the 2.5.
Okay, and if the Jets win this game, as I say, the bookies will be throwing parties in Vegas. So get out there and join Dave for that one, because they'll be over their season over under of 4.5 or 5. The Bengals, the Titans get the back-to-back, the Ravens and the Bengals, get them both at home. They're 4.5-point favorites this week over Cincinnati. I probably won't touch this game, but I'm going to take the Titans. You know, Mariota has not played all that well, and I think he's due to play a little bit better. And you know, we'll see how this goes, but if you don't think the nail's in the coffin for the Bengals season, a loss here will cement it.
Yeah, and I am playing this one, as a matter of fact, David. No A.J. Green, right? No Jake Fisher, right?
No, they'll have A.J. Green unless he's hurt.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Mike Evans.
Mike Evans, yeah.
No Jake Fisher there. Look, I mean, Dory Jackson and that defense has played well, right? Talking about Tennessee, Dick LeBeau's getting the job done over there right now. I think they'll be able to get after Andy Dalton in this game because that line's just horrible for them. Just much like I thought I like Cincinnati's defense, but I don't think it's going to be enough in this game. So I'm with you. I'm laying the 4.5 points there. Sorry about the brain fart about AJ. I'm thinking about Mike Evans there. That's another reason to take the Jets in that game.
To take the Titans in that game?
No.
To take the Jets in the Buccaneer game. Right.
Okay,
maybe it's probably the two most interesting games in the 1 o'clock slate are the Vikings Redskins, most meaningful of the Saints Bills. And this is a tough one for me, Dave, because, you know, I was really buying into the Bills, and then they were just as bad as you could be last weekend. They got who blew their doors off? Who blew them out of the water last week? The Bills got smoked by
the Jets.
The Jets, right. And the Saints got a nice win at home, a comfortable win over Tampa. So I like both these teams. I think they're both going to make the playoffs. But the Bills better show something a little better here. I'm not going to touch this game, but believe it or not, I'm going to take the Saints minus 3 because I kind of am buying their defense.
Wow. The question is going up up north there to Buffalo. I think the Saints really, you know, they have the better quarterback in Drew Brees. They're able to run the football. They are indeed playing better defense this year. Look, Buffalo's got, if they want to make the playoffs, they better start beating teams such as the Saints. I think they actually win this one at home, David. So give me Buffalo plus the 3 points.
Okay. The last 1 o'clock game is Cleveland goes to Detroit. I think we all saw what we expected of the Lions after seeing them play the Steelers. They are a potent offensive team. I expect them to put up a lot of points. I probably won't play this game at 11 either, Dave. I'll just for our purposes, I'll take the Browns just from a rooting interest, but. I hope the Browns keep it close, but Detroit's going to win this game.
Boy, there's no reason to think that, you know, this match is like the Colts versus the Steelers game, man. There's no reason to think that Detroit won't win this one big. I know Hugh Jackson has kind of challenged his team this week to, you know, show me what you got. In the face of adversity, they're going to have a lot of adversity against Matthew Stafford. Give me the Lions, lay those 11.
Okay, 4 o'clock game, Texans at the Rams, Rams minus 11. Are scoring 30 a week. Give me the Rams.
Some big lines this week, right?
Three double-digit lines, yeah.
I mean, you got to tell me Wade Phillips against Tom Savage. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm with you. Give me the Rams, lay those points. That's another big number, but no fear.
The big national game, Cowboys at the Falcons. And again, we play this game with Ezekiel Elliott yesterday at 4 o'clock. It comes out that they will be out. Zeke, you know, another injunction against him. So, you know, I assume that means he'll be out this weekend, but I don't know. There have been so many twists and turns in this case. I can't tell you the exact answer, but the Falcons are getting three. Are the Falcons finally going to get their offense together? Does it matter if Zeke's in there when Dak's playing as well as he is? Again, Dave, it's a coin flip for me. I don't know what to do. Give me the Falcons one more time, but they, you know, they've disappointed massively offensively.
Yeah, you know, Dez Bryant's banged up. Some will say that you and I can run behind that offensive line, David, but I'm not so sure about that. It'd be interesting to see which running back actually gets the lion's share of the carries, assuming Zeke does not play. Boy, Atlanta, what a Steve Sarkisian, what a mess that offense has become all of a sudden. I you know me, though. I like Matty Ice at home, David. And with a Dallas team without Zeke, I think they get it done. Give me Atlanta plus the three.
Okay, I'll just say take the Giants minus 2.5 on the road against the 49ers. Until they get Jimmy Garoppolo in there, C.J. Beathard is not, he's number 32 of 32. In the NFL, so the Niners aren't going to score points. So I'm not a Giants guy, but I'll take them this weekend.
I'll lay it as well. Next,
Patriots at the Broncos on the Sunday night game, 8:30. Denver, it's a tire fire, man. Their defense is still what we think their defense is, and then they go and give up 51 to the Eagles. There was a defensive touchdown or two in there as well, but they found a way to scheme and beat them. And if that's on tape. Bill Parcells will see that, and he'll take them apart as well. And I don't expect the Broncos to score much. Maybe they get up for the game because it's nationally televised Sunday night and it's at home. But at the end of the day, this won't be close. It'll be double digits. Give me the Patriots.
You said Bill Parcells, you mean?
Bill, yeah. I was listening to our boy Zach. Yeah.
What line are you showing this? 7 or 6?
7.5.
Okay, yeah, but still, Denver's defense usually can find a way to cause a little bit of fits with Brady, I think. Look, make no mistake, New England's going to win this game, but I think Denver keeps it a touchdown or less. So give me, I'll take Denver plus those points.
Okay, and then Carolina is giving 9 at home to the Dolphins on Monday night. The Dolphins. Should have got a late touchdown to get a push against the Raiders the other day. Jay Cutler actually played okay with those broken ribs. I think 9's too many for this game. I expect Carolina to win, but let's look at something like 27 to 20. So give me the 9 points.
Yeah, I'll take the 9 points as well, too. I think Carolina wins this, but I think Miami keeps it close enough to cover the number.
Okay, Dave, Steelers and the Colts right on 10. You know, as you've said, you've been consistent, not going to get them scoring 30 points until they score 30 points. Is it right that the Steelers have lost their last three games coming off the bye? Is that correct?
I think they are 0-3 coming off the bye. Last three years.
Last year it was the Patriots they had to play. Look, obviously the Steelers should win this game. It shouldn't be a close game. I'm going to say they control T.Y. Hilton and they do win this game comfortably. Give it to me in a 30-15 Steeler victory.
All right. Last year the Steelers played the New England Patriots, and then after the bye they lost to the Baltimore Ravens. They lost. Remember that was the game that Darius Heyward-Bey got hurt. That was the game I think that Artie Burns gave up the quick slant 90 something yards to Mike Wallace.
So they lost to the Patriots. They lost to the Ravens, and then did they play the Cowboys the next week? Or the Giants.
What was it last year? They went they lost to the. Remember they went Dolphins lost, Patriots lost, bye, lost to the Ravens, lost to the Cowboys.
Four straight losses last year.
Yeah, remember.
It's amazing that the podcast still exists and the city's not burned to the ground.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't quite remember it like that.
And Mike Tomlin has a job, right? Unreal. In 2015, real quick, they beat the Browns ahead of the bye. Then remember they lost to the Seahawks on the road. When Ben had the concussion kind of late there.
Marcus Wheaton's career day might have had more yards that game than he's had in the rest of his career combined.
And then in 2014, they played the Tennessee Titans. They beat them, and then they had the bye week. And then remember they lost to the New Orleans Saints at home in that 35-32 game there. So 0-3 in their last three. Look, it's not going to happen this time. This is... I don't do this a lot with this when it comes to Steelers. This is your stone cold lead pipe lock of the century of the week for sure. The Steelers are going to win this, and the Steelers are going to cover the number. I'm still not going to pick them, however, to hit that 30 mark. I don't think they'll need to. I think James Conner gets some work kind of late in this game as well, too. I have them covering the 10. Are we using 10, I assume, right?
Yep.
27-16. Keith Butler always talks about that magic number of 16 or 17 points. I think they get it done there. So 11-point win for the Steelers, 27-16 in a game that probably won't even be as close as that score dictates.
All right. Well, that kind of wraps us up for the week. So good stuff from Zach. And everybody enjoy the football viewing this weekend. There are not that many left in the college season, so enjoy this one.
Boy, this one went from we think we might have an hour's worth to talk about to 90-minute show here, David, so we better wrap it up. Follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, as several several of you have, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, until Monday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.